On the sides of the throne base, Shalmaneser showed subject kings bringing the goods and the taxes that had been demanded by Shalmaneser to him. So we see that there are different types of relationships on this one throne base. This strongly indicates that Babylonia was a significant power in the region. And perhaps Shalmaneser even addressed the Babylonian king as brother, as we saw in the Amarna period. We don't know. Like his father, Shalmaneser also built a large palace, about 500 by 800 feet, in the new capital at Nimrud, dedicating it in the 13th year of his reign. This palace contained the usual reception rooms and domestic areas. It also had workshops for the manufacture of armor and weaponry, and so we get some insight into the palace control of making weapons. Perhaps they were weapons for the king's own guard or for specific troops. But since the king was in charge of the Assyrian army, it's not surprising that he would want to have an armory and workshops ready in his own palace to disseminate to the troops as he led them out to battle. The success of Ashurnasirpal II and Shalmaneser III did not ensure lasting prosperity for their state. Revolts broke out near the end of Shalmaneser's rule that continued for several years. His son, Shamshi-Adad V, put down these rebellions, but Assyria was severely weakened in the late 9th to the mid-8th century. It is possible that strong governors in the areas that Assyria controlled were challenging the king. One indication of the weaker central rule of the empire is the fact that after Shamshi-Adad V's death in 811, the queen Samiramut ruled with her son Adad-nirari III for 5 years, from 811 to 806 BC. And you remember, Samiramut is supposedly the ideal for the queen Semiramis, whose legend grew in later years. The Greeks began to expand her personality and her deeds and misdeeds. And this was one of the stereotypes that we talked about being conveyed to the West over the centuries about the East. It's certainly an important fact that a queen was ruling in her own name as co-regent with her son, because this is not typical of the Assyrians or really any other Near Eastern power. So when we see references to women, especially in a position of rule, this shows that there is some trouble at the top if a woman has to take control. The royal annals and other accounts describe the succession of rulers in this period of turmoil, but there's little doubt that the king was basically without power, that he was ruling in name only, and the territory that he controlled became increasingly small. Governors of different regions that had been loyal to Assyria began to set up monuments in their own name and with their own image, listing the deeds that they had accomplished during their rule. So they were the ones who were in charge, not the king. This situation continued until the mid-8th century BC, when strong rulers similar to Ashurnasirpal II and Shalmaneser III took back control of their empire. We'll meet one of those and discuss his rule, Sargon II, in the next lecture.